Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. And thank you very, very much for taking your time to come and see us. So I'm Paul Fineman, Group CEO. Giles Willits, our Group CFO. And we're very happy to have the opportunity of presenting to you our half-year results and some messages beyond that. As you may have seen, it's been an excellent start to the year. And I'm happy to say that that's due to a blend of factors. We've had strong organic growth. If you look at our profits growth, approximately half of that is attributable to our organic growth and half to our recent acquisition, which we'll delve into in detail. I think it's important that whatever the financial metrics and measurements and judgments that you'll look at, our business is about great customer service and terrific product development and innovation. A few examples of our more recent innovation are on the table today. But that's what our customers judge us on: dependability, innovation, etc. So combining our organic growth, a milestone acquisition, which we completed at the end of August, continued excellent, strong returns on capital investment and product innovation, we've had a record start to the year. And we're very, very happy with that, and strong momentum going into the second half too. If you look at the headline numbers on slide three, I guess they speak for themselves. And as I say, Giles will go into detail, but 23% sales growth, 76% underlying profit growth. And as I say, half of that attributable to our organic performance, a very pleasing 79% earnings per share growth, and a growth at the half year dividend by 25%. And we can talk about a future expectations on dividend later on. But we are very pleased with that set of results. Clearly, they're strong. But here's the good news. They aren't perfect. We've had our challenges. There are aspects of the business that we can improve. There are more opportunities for greater efficiency. So this isn't a question of all the planets have aligned. They haven't. But we've got more wins than otherwise. So we're in a very good place, and we're confident of further momentum going into the future. I think you're familiar with the scale of some of the numbers of that we're involved in. In this particular financial year, I think we will exceed probably 800 million units of products that we sell around the world, perhaps over 40,000 individual SKUs. Tremendous complexity, but in that complexity comes the opportunity to make money. On slide five, you'll get a feeling of our diversity. This is a business with scale. We are a diverse business, and we're a flexible, versatile business. So you will see that probably in the toughest individual retail environment that we are active in, the UK. The UK represents approximately 20% of our total activities during the first half of the year, with the US being our area of major activity. And clearly, we are growing in all categories. So for example, in our creative play business, that business in the United States will double this year. So we are active in all regions, in all channels, across all categories. And in that diversity, if one region is tougher than another, then, you know, we have flexibility to hopefully improve overall performance because of our diversity. So all in all, that's produced an excellent financial result. And Giles, if you can now give some granularity, and we'll be very happy to take some questions later. Thank you.
So significant change and progress across the P&L, really. You've seen revenues up 23%, of which 20% of that is being driven by the acquisition of Impact. And then when we adjust for FX and do it on a constant currency basis, organic growth of 4%. So overall, good sales progress. But the real change has been also in the P&L, and Paul's alluded to it already, in profit and PBT up 76% underlying PBT, of which broadly half and half organic and acquisition growth. We'll get into the organic growth on the next slide and where that's coming from. A couple of things just to point out on here. One is the we continue to have that focus on managing our overheads, and you'll see that our overheads as a percentage of sales have dropped again from 15 last year to 14 on an underlying basis, and actually dropping again when you look at it from a including Impact. So a continued focus there. And then finally, you will also notice in the P&L at the half year, we've got £3 million worth of exceptionals. Those £3 million really, all but 0.1, relate to the acquisition and the subsequent restructuring costs that we've got within the US. So fair to say that there will be more exceptionals in the second half. We guided, when we did the acquisition, we guided to exceptionals in the region of about £7 million in relation to the acquisition. Most of those falling in this financial year in full, with some in the following financial year. We're still maintaining that guidance, and we're still in the same position. And when you hear about the update, you're getting it on Impact and the successes we're having, you'll understand why that we're not changing that guidance. If we just flip to the next page, the big story on the regional P&L outside of the increase in sales and the increase in profit is the margins and how the margins have grown, 6.7% up to 9.3% this year. So quite a significant change. And it's fair to say that we need to, first of all, isolate part of that, which is Impact, the impact of Impact on the margins, which has been quite significant. We have 1 month of Impact's trading. It's also their peak trading month. So the margins there that you're seeing at 14.2% are not really representative of a whole year, sadly. Over a whole year, we're looking at closer to 8%. But that's slightly distorting the margin at the half year. If we back that out, we can really see that the two drivers of the margin improvement are Australia and also in Europe. Let's dig into Australia first. Australia really is a story of two factors. One is the acquisition of Biscay, which we did in January 2013. It was a small acquisition, really just a bolt-on card business in Australia that we brought in at a good multiple. There were integration synergies that we could get from that, but it was also, because it's a card business, it's a product category which is high margin. Those two factors together are driving that margin improvement year on year, or half year on half year. In addition, if we go to Europe, Europe is driven by a mixture of efficiency gains that we're getting from the investment we've been making in CapEx, and then also improvements we're getting from our focus on working with the winning retailers in Europe and increasing our sales of higher margin categories into those retailers, helping take the blended margin of the European business up as well. So good improvement in those two key regions. You will notice in the US that revenues stepped back at the half year, 2.6%. No need for alarm. The timing of shipments to retailers was later this half versus the prior year. And what we have seen in October and also in November is those shipments catch up, and we're now very much anticipating and continuing to anticipate the a year-on-year improvement both in sales and also in profits in the US at an organic level, as well as obviously the improvements that we're going to get from the acquisition of Impact. The final piece in the regions is the UK. UK, I think, would be fair to sum up, is one of the toughest markets that we have. So to actually see the business go forward, both in terms of revenue and in margin, has been very satisfying and a pleasing result. Let's move on. If we move on to the cash, important to note that it's the half year. The half year is our peak working capital period. And therefore, we would anticipate, as we do every half year, an increase in the level of debt. And you've seen that in the half year. We start the year with a net cash balance. At the half year, we end up with a higher debt number. We have that at this half. We also have at this half the effect of the Impact acquisition, which brought in additional debt. So put those two together, and we're at £100 million worth of debt at the half year. But please remember, this is half year, it's the peak. We would expect that to happen. We'll, on a later slide, you'll see how we convert that debt to cash very quickly over the next couple of months. Two stories to bring out on this. One is on the cash flow is, if we look at the working capital, and on the slide you can see we've isolated Impact so that we can see an underlying impact on underlying effect of working capital from the non-Impact businesses. In that, you'll see that stocks, there's a build of stock year on year is higher year on year than the, and that really just reflects that timing point I was talking about earlier, specifically in the US, where we were, the stock levels we had were higher because we just hadn't shipped the stock yet. As I say, we've now seen those inventory levels drop in line with last year, and we're looking great. So we really don't have any concerns at the half year in relation to inventory. It purely is really reflecting timing. A second item on there is CapEx, which is worth mentioning. Year on year, very similar in terms of level, 3.8 versus 3.6. Some of the areas, big areas that we're focusing on are the ERP system that we're putting into the US, a new operating system for the business. That's going well. It's gone live on time. We're parallel running at the moment, and all looking good so far. So that's been a good success in the first half. We're also continuing to do investments in efficiencies as well through the first half. We will see those investments and other investments in the second half, and we are maintaining our CapEx, the level of CapEx guidance between 10 to 12 million over the full year. If we just turn to the next slide, I referred to it earlier, which is this sort of the flow of debt in the business and how the half year very much reflects the peak debt period. This year we have the added delights of the Impact acquisition, which gave us a kick in the level of debt at the half year. If you remember, I'm not sure we spoke to everybody, but if you remember, we did highlight at the for the Impact acquisition that we were not only buying the business, but because we were buying the business at its peak working capital position, we were buying the working capital as well. That working capital has quickly, and we said it would, and it has quickly turned into cash. And I can confirm today that is the case. We have very much gone past that piece, and we have seen that working capital that we bought turn to cash as anticipated. So very much back in line with what was expected in terms of the shape of the debt through the year. We're in great position. Our cash, we are seeing cash coming in from the sales that we've made, from the inventory that we've invested in, and we're in a great position going forward. Final piece on this slide, just as in terms of average leverage, you'll have seen that the average leverage of the business continues to be low at 1.3 times at the half year, and we will see that maintained at the full year as well, and that 1.3 times, if not slightly better. So we're in a great, good average leverage and showing good improvement year on year. If you remember, we were 1.5 times average leverage the prior year, at the full year. In terms of the balance sheet, which is the next page, really the movement in net assets driven by the acquisition of Impact, and you can see that we've isolated the effect that that's had on the group balance sheet in the table. And we're also continuing to see that improving trend that we've had year on year in relation to the return on capital employed. And we will continue to see that improvement at the year end as well. So 24.1% at the half year, and we'll have a similar level of return on capital employed at the year end too. So good progress there. One of the areas that we highlight in most presentations is what are the challenges that we have within the businesses? What are the areas that, keep us awake? And we've highlighted two in particular here. One is Brexit. We love to talk about Brexit. And the other is US tariffs. Less talked about currently in the UK. In terms of Brexit, we're very comfortable. We don't actually do that much trade between the UK and Europe in terms of sales or in terms of purchasing. What we do source, we tend to, the big raw material sourcing that we're doing is sourced from Scandinavia. And what we're planning now is how we manage the logistics of the impact of Brexit on the logistics of the business to the extent that we know. So we are routing our raw material supplies through the Western ports rather than through the Eastern ports. And we're also doing we're looking at, can we source from UK suppliers rather than necessarily relying on non-UK suppliers. So these are the things that we're doing. As I say, it's important to stress this is not a significant impact to the group. And within the UK, we're really isolated to logistical issues rather than anything more underlying than that. An area of focus in the US, no surprise, and now obviously the US is a bigger part of our group, is the discussions that are taking place between the US and China. So tariffs, put into context, FY19, we'd pretty much done our importing activity before the tariffs came in. So from a financial impact during FY19, not material to the group, and not something that would impact the end result. The focus now is on FY20. We obviously have an annual buying cycle and ordering process with our retailers. So now we're going into a process with those retailers and trying to understand how we can do that that sourcing and manufacturing and importing, and do it in a way that ensures that we're not exposed to the tariff to any great extent. We're doing that through a number of different strategies, resourcing product rather than from China, but from other areas. And that's not just other Far East areas, it's also areas in the Americas and also in Europe. We're looking at how we can re-engineer the product so that we're able to reduce the cost and therefore the impact of the tariffs, if there is an impact. It only, just probably worth stressing, it only impacts, too many impacts in this presentation, it only really has an effect on a number of categories. So it's not, this isn't all of the US supply. It's only certain categories. And we're working through those categories and finding solutions. The end game is we anticipate and are confident that there will not be a significant financial impact, and certainly not anything that would impact on our guidance that we've already given to the markets. So we're in good shape there and on it. It's busy. And then the final piece in terms of, again, a slide that we show regularly is our commitments to shareholders and what our aims are. And we're maintaining those commitments. It's around ongoing double-digit EPS growth. That's what we've said before, and we're maintaining that that commitment, that objective. It's also about improving the payout an improving dividend policy, reducing our dividend cover. We were 3.6 times last year, and we're aiming over a number of years to get to 2.5 times. And I think if you look at the guidance that's in the market at the moment, it's about 3.4 times for FY19, and we've maintained that view. We haven't changed that guidance. Final piece is our view on average leverage. We have previously been saying that we would be in a range of 1.5 times to 2.5 times average leverage, and we're making that a little keener and saying we're actually going to be between 1 and 2 times going forward. And that really reflects the improvements that we've had over the last number of years in terms of bringing that average leverage down. And we're now in a position where at 1.3 times at the year end, we're at the lower end of that new scale anyway, but it still gives us the capacity should we need it.
So that's the good news. And how about the future? What's going to drive growth in the future? Well, we have 3 key strategic pillars as stated on slide 15. Working with the winners, what does that mean? We choose who do we try and put our resources into? Who do we decide not to work with? That is just as important. And I think on balance, the decisions that we've made have overwhelmingly, I'm pleased to say, been good ones. And a lot of our customers, even in the most difficult and challenging environments, are doing pretty well. And that's well illustrated in the UK, which is a tough place for us to do business. We have increasingly global relationships. So we're trading with Walmart, I think, in 5 or 6 countries, Costco in over 10 countries, Aldi, I think, in 12 or 13 countries, Lidl similarly. And those relationships are blossoming. Not only are they consolidating their supply base, but we also have the opportunity to sell across our product categories with those customers. They are growing organically and we're growing across our breadth of products. And that's showing in the numbers. In terms of design and innovation, it's been a difficult place in the last couple of years in terms of our main buying commodity, which is paper. Last year, I think the average inflation was around 13%, similar this year. So how have we managed to contain that and, in fact, better grow our margins? It's because of innovation. It's because of scale. It's because of efficiency. It's because of diversity. These things are difficult to manage, but I'd like to think that we're doing a pretty good job with those. But I'm pleased to say it's not a perfect job. We've got more to come. And as a group, we're a decentralized group. One of our challenges as we get bigger is how do we really leverage our scale and make sure that we are dealing collectively with the right suppliers, we're buying at the right prices across our group. And I would say that we're getting better at doing that, but we've still got a long way to go. So that's a future win. Obviously, we've been growing organically, but we've also been growing through acquisition. As Giles mentioned, Biscay acquired in January of this year, fully integrated by September. We're very pleased. That was our plan and we executed it well and perhaps ahead of what we expected to do. Similarly, with Impact, a real milestone acquisition, a real game changer, and the whole integration of that has been pivotal. So that's a good point to go over the page and just to update you with a little bit of granularity as to how that integration process is going. So when we bought the business, we said we are very focused on the tangible, low-hanging fruit of operational synergies. And we identified $5 million of synergies that we felt we can get our arms around and absolutely deliver. Now, there are synergies over and above that, commercial synergies, cross-selling synergies. But let's just update you on those tangible synergies. So we have a gift wrap manufacturing plant in a place called Midway in Georgia, just outside of Savannah in Georgia. And Impact has one in Memphis. We took the decision and have now announced the decision in October that we will close our facility in Midway, Georgia. That will be fully integrated into the Memphis facility by the end of December. That was a significant part of the potential operational savings. We have a freehold property in Midway in Georgia, which we felt we would have the opportunity to sell and hopefully realise at least its book cost, which is approximately $6 million. I can inform you today that ahead of schedule in terms of time and ahead of expected valuation, we have reached agreement to sell the property. We are in an advanced stage of due diligence on that. And it could be the case that we will actually realise that before the end of the financial year. We're very pleased with that as an outcome. I can also say that on a human basis, we had 150 good people working in Midway in Georgia. There were a number of individuals. We wanted to retain their expertise and ideally for them to relocate to Memphis. And I'm very happy to say that that's been the case. We were also able to find roles within the area for 50 of the 75 people who would leave the business. And then finally, we believe we have now reached agreement that we will retain a pick and pack operation that we have in Midway. We felt that we may have to actually relocate that and have the cost of moving the stock and replacing the people. That is no longer going to be the case. We will retain that operation. So that's a really good outcome. Hopefully we'll deliver that one, but we're at a pretty advanced stage. So that's pretty good. What does that mean from a P&L basis? Of that $5 million, approximately $500,000 of profitability will take place in FY19, another $2 million in FY20, and then the full run rate of $5 million by the end of FY21. At the same time, by acquiring Impact, we now have the collective scale to be able to invest in technology and print technology, and we have now actually committed to doing that. So we will see the benefit of that in FY21. So in terms of the $5 million, we can look you in the eye and say, we are in good shape. Now, over and above that, we have now met with all the major customers, all the major suppliers. We're leveraging our design and IP expertise that existed in both businesses. We had a lot to learn from the guys at Impact. They are now we're one team, and I think that the whole integration process has gone very well. There have been no nasty surprises. Now, part of that was actually because the whole acquisition process took a long time. So we had a lot of time to dig deep into the business as best as you can. And I have to say that the teams are working together very well. We're very happy with that acquisition. So far, so good. So for the second half of this year, we've got a full order book. October and November were very satisfactory. We are at the tail end of our Christmas deliveries. Now, we're in good shape and we just have to focus on the balance of the year executing those orders. But I would say service levels have been very good. We, as Giles mentioned, you know, to implement a new ERP IT platform is not always 100% easy. There's been the odd stomach ulcer, but actually we've managed that well, and we will roll that out across the United States. We'll then pause for breath. Has it been the success that we wanted it to be? Have we delivered? What have we learnt? And then we will consider what aspects of that will actually make sense in the rest of the group. The integration plan with Impact, we actually brought in additional resource to help make that happen. We've got a very stretched team. They're not sitting there twiddling their thumbs. So we brought in additional resource. I think it's really been worthwhile. It costs quite a lot of money, but it's tremendous value. and it's been a good move. And we've learned a lot in the process. So I guess the message is the momentum going into the second half is strong. We're very focused, as always, in terms of converting that profit into cash. And we feel very confident that at the year end, we can have a material improvement in our cash balances compared to last year. And, you know, very much on track there, with perhaps the opportunity for some upside if we're fortunate enough to conclude the sale of the property. So, I'm often asked, well, why invest? The group has had years of sustained, improvement and progress, and we're delighted with that. But as I said, there's plenty in the pipeline. We can, continue to enhance margins. There are efficiency initiatives which are already in the pipeline, and you always find more. The cross-selling synergies from the acquisition of Impact, a business which was entirely focused in the United States. We are already rolling out some of Impact's categories into Europe, into the UK, into Australia. It doesn't happen overnight. Buying cycles can be 12 to 18 months in advance. So, but we feel good that there's good momentum there. And in terms of M&A, we bought two companies in the last calendar year. The last was a biggie. And, that definitely focuses our minds and resources. Opportunities come along. Often it's London buses. They all come along at the same time. But we're going to be discerning. It's not a question of whether we feel we would have the balance sheet or the support from our banks or investors. It's more a question of, would we acquire a business, or do we feel we can achieve what that would do for us organically? Do we have the management bandwidth? Do we think this is sustainable? Do we think it's delivering the synergies, the identifiable, tangible synergies that we really felt excited about was the case with Impact? So we're looking at businesses all the time, probably 7 or 8 files on the desk at any one time. Most of them, frankly, after initial period of investigation, probably aren't of interest. But we're active when we're looking, but we can continue to grow the business organically. And so M&A has really got to make sense for us. But overall, we will continue to focus on turning profit into cash. It's a healthy thing to do. But it's been a great start to the year, lots to go for, and we'd be very happy to take any questions now.
The organic growth rate of 4%, how much is price versus volume? And also, can you comment on the trends in pricing generally?
Yeah.
And then another one about growth is the growth taking market share, or is the whole market itself growing?
There's no one-size-fits-all answer to that. Depends on the region. There tends to be a migration to lower price point merchandise. So we do have some inherent inflation in the lower price points. But there's also a migration from, a £3 price point to a £2 price point. It tends to level itself out. So that sales growth has been mainly about volume growth and taking market share. And some of that is because our customers, where there's someone having a tough time, there's a winner. And hopefully that comes to our decision as who are the winners. Does that answer the question?
Yep.
Okay. Can I just ask about Impact? What were your, what sort of P did you pay for it? And what is it now making? So what is the post-acquisition PE?
So the EV to EBITDA ratio is 4.9 times.
Right.
That's how we looked at it in terms of put a value on it. The second then is, what do you think it's going to be doing in terms of accretion for EPS? And when we talked to the markets and we sort of gave guidance on that, we were giving guidance. It's difficult because obviously we bought it halfway through a year, but in a full year, you're looking at, you know, circa 20% accretion. So it was a very accretive deal for us. Bought at a good rate. I think we'll be working.
Is the full, the 20%, is that after you've got that 5 million in synergies? So you're talking a few years' time? No, that's before that.
Okay. Yeah.
So synergies are on top.
Good question.
And the impact has the same kind of cash flow.
Yeah.
And net debt distribution across the year.
Maybe slightly earlier in terms of peak, but it's if you looked at the graph with impact, it wouldn't look significantly different.
So the 4.9 times EV is based on their average 12-month debt, is it?
It was based on the amount we paid. EV is including the debt, the amount we paid, which was 73.5, divided by the adjusted EBITDA.
You said that you're going to spend 10 million on capex in the year. You've explained the first half. Can you explain what the rest is?
I'll give you a flavour of that. So. One of the areas which has been really successful for us, as some may recall, we've traditionally sold bags which consumers then buy. And we identified another market which is not for resale bags that retailers give to consumers. And this is bags, let's say mid-market bags, which would be these kind of products, mainly for the fashion and beauty industries. We started manufacturing these bags in Wales in September 2017. We invested around £800,000 or £900,000 in that bag line. I'm pleased to say it's gone incredibly well, and we're now putting in our second line. We've got very good forward visibility. We're making a product for many different brands now. It's an exciting area. We knew it was a good area. It's really accelerated with the migration from plastics into paper. So we're going to be investing around £1 million, I think, in our next line. So that will happen in the second half. We also mentioned the press that we will put in the United States, and we will put down a deposit in the second half for that. The total project for the United States, once all is in place, will be around $4.5 million, and we'll put down about 25% of that in the second half of this year. We also have a continued, as our colleagues in Holland call it, robotization of our converting lines in Holland and in the UK. And that will also be at around £1.5 million in the second half. But as has historically been the case, Bruce, you're looking at around a four-year payback. So these are quick paybacks, and we're very confident in those investments.
Can I just ask, sort of following on from the bag example, what trends are you seeing in the market? I mean, it must be difficult because you deal with the world, but things like, you know, online retailing, how is that impacting your customers? What sort of trends are you seeing in the market?
Well, in terms of the migration from brick and mortar to online, of course, it's definitely happening, as we all know, in some categories more than others. So actually, when we see the amount of product that's going through online players like Amazon, Ocado, and their equivalents around the world, it's now for us around 4%. Yeah. 4% of our total sales. That is purely online sold. But of course, then there are brick and mortar retailers like Walmart who also have an e-commerce side of their business. That requires a different approach from our point of view. What they're trying to do increasingly is to differentiate their online offering to their in-store offering. So if you take bulky, low-cost items like we have, it doesn't particularly work that well online. But for example, if you say all you need for Christmas for $20 or all you need for your party solution for 10 children for $10, that works online. And so what we're seeing is there is growth online. in our categories, it's not as pronounced as you would think it would be. It's probably more so in the UK than it is in the United States. That's the answer to that. It will be a growing area, but it's not a dominant area at the market.
We all recognise the collateral damage that's been done at the moment, and particularly in the UK with the UK retailers. So two questions. You're negotiating, I think you said, 12 to 18 months out. So these guys are becoming more and more demanding. So how are you preserving your margin? And then secondly, what about your credit risk and how are you dealing with that?
Well, as I've said before, you're absolutely right. None of them are pussycats, and they've got a job to do. But I'm going to contradict myself. I would say our relationships are more collaborative today than ever before, because we want to work with the winners, they want to work with the winners. So, of course, price is really important, but it's not the only factor. We've got a great track record, genuinely, of delivering on time in full. So we're dependable, we're compliant. You know, we run our own factory in China. To be compliant, social, ethical, environmental is hard in that environment. But that is a great standard facility, and we feel very comfortable that people would go to that facility unannounced if it's a customer or a licensor, and be very happy with the outcome. So, first of all, our track record of dependability and compliance is very good. Secondly, I would say that in terms of efficiency, we've reduced our manufacturing cost, and that enables us to absorb some of the headwinds like double-digit, you know, paper cost inflation, and to be able to do that because we're just very efficient. Our waste has reduced, our energy consumption has reduced, et cetera, et cetera. But it's also about innovation. So where you are a very competitive or more commoditized products, by really knowing how to develop product and add value to a product and being unique, frankly, then you can manage your margin mix. And so the kind of collaboration would be, Mr. Customer, on a basic roll of gift wrap, we're absorbing 15% paper cost inflation. We are prepared to hold our prices, but we will do that if we can have some of your business in X category so we can manage our margin together. That's the kind of thing that we're doing. And I'd like to think that over the last 2 or 3 years, as we've grown our margins despite those headwinds, that's being effective. But there is more to go. We've got geographic diversity, we've got category diversity, we've got channel diversity. We're manufacturing, we're outsourcing, we're pretty nimble. But if it was easy, everyone would do it, and I can assure you it's not easy.
And in terms of the credit risk with these large players in the market, which, you know, there has been so much collateral damage, and we can't take our eyes off the ball.
I completely agree. I mean, as I said at the beginning, it's a question of not just working with the winners, but deciding those that you don't want to work with. And in the UK, actually, more than in any other region, if I look back at those customers that went belly up and we withdrew from those customers, Clinton's, British Home Stores, House of Fraser, Pound World, etc., I'm pleased to say we got those decisions right. Our exposure was peanuts, and we are very, very vigilant. We clearly, managing credit is one thing. Managing exposure, who's going to go bust, is really the discussion, is another. If we look at our top 10 customers in the group, circa 40% of our sales, these are the world's biggest retailers. You know, Walmart is $500 billion. I'm not going to lose sleep about if Walmart are going to go bust.
It's the other players.
Completely.
It can bring the house down, or it can certainly...
You know, our bad debt experience in the last 3 or 4 years, I think cumulatively has averaged at around 0.1% of sales. We have 10,000 customers. some go bust. But I believe that the track record is very, very good, but we've got to be very vigilant. I couldn't agree more.
You just talk a little bit about the Aldi and Lidl relationship and how that,
sure,
how that's maybe been growing over the last 12 months,
yeah,
and what the price points are doing with those customers.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Because I'm imagining that they might be actually going up for you.
Yeah, you're right. And people don't think of Aldi and Lidl as selling more smoked salmon and lobster than anyone else, do they? But that is the case. So in our categories, first of all, our relationship with Lidl, it's a centralized relationship. So Lidl buys globally, whereas Aldi buys regionally. So we are dealing with Aldi in Australia, in the United States, across Europe and in the UK. And we are doing business with them across all categories. You're absolutely right that there has been over the, if I think of our original business with Lidl and Aldi many years ago, it was an absolutely very sharp entry-level price point merchandise. That was it. Today, that's part of the offering, but we have definitely up-traded in quality, in design, in innovation. No question that's the case. So I would say it's a thriving relationship. In the United States in particular, the growth in Aldi has been incredible, albeit from a low base. But I think they'll have around 1,000 stores now.
So just help me square that circle. So if Lidl buys globally,
yeah,
why do you only service them in 12 to 15 countries and not...
Well, they buy from us. We deliver out to 12 regions, then they deliver out to other regions. Right. So it makes it...
So you supply both these guys in Germany?
Yes, we do. But with a different offering, obviously, we're very sensitive to that.
Paul, two quick questions from me. Why do you not split out UK from Asia in your segmental analysis?
Yeah.
And the second question is, you've addressed already the Brexit issue from the standpoint of your being quite sanguine about the supply chain and continuities. And have we done any sensitivity studies from the standpoint of FX, mm-hmm, and the likely impacts of hard Brexit thereupon?
If I can answer the first one, I shall yield to my colleague about the second. So on the UK and Asia, in Asia, we have our factory and the vast majority of its activities is making crackers. That operation is managed by our UK team and the vast majority of its products are for the UK market. That's why we consolidate it together. There is a growing non-UK part of that business. Maybe we'd review that in the future, but today it just reflects, it's effectively a satellite of our UK business.
So why do we not sell into Asia in general as a market? Why is that not a...
We actually do. That comes under the rest of the world and in the by destination. But for example, our sales to, say, Japan, from our US business.
Okay.
They're buying US product. But that is a growth opportunity for the future.
Yeah.
Thank you. FX?
So, yeah, there is a sensitivity. The main sensitivity is just pure translation. A weaker sterling actually is beneficial to us. A stronger sterling, then we're translating, and it would translate to less, effectively. It's because, so that's really the main impact of FX on the business in relation to Brexit. So since Brexit, where we saw the pound weaken, then we've seen that benefit come through in translation of, you know, foreign, well, the US and Australian and European businesses' profits to more pounds. So have we looked at that? Yeah, I mean, we do.
So you're largely internally hedged.
Yeah.
From a trading, exactly, perspective.
Correct. And Brexit wouldn't impact necessarily on that. So it's you know, our if we're buying in US dollars or we're buying in renminbi or whatever. So it's it's not a direct link to Brexit. To the extent that we do have foreign currency exposure, a lot of it is naturally hedged within the business, and where it isn't, we buy forward to cover the risk.
If you take a sort of a five-year view, where do you see the sort of the biggest opportunity, either sort of geographically or a particular product segment, in terms of adding the most to your revenues? What's the sort of, where's the...
Well, I'd answer that today as definitely the United States. Because although with the acquisition we have a bigger market share, in gift packaging in the United States, our share is around 22 to 23%. In gift wrap, by the way, it's about 43%. But in gift packaging, we still have, although we're the single biggest player, it's a highly fragmented market and there's lots more to go for. The other point there also, as you know, I've mentioned before, whilst our relationships with the national retailers are significant, there's lots to go for with the regional players in the United States. And the regional players in the United States are bigger than some of the national players in the UK. So by channel, by category, and the other point in the US is by season. Our business in the United States is quite Christmas biased. But Impact, for example, their business is more than 90% Christmas, whereas our business is growing in Easter, Valentine's, Thanksgiving, Halloween is huge there, and it's huge here as well. But there are other, there's a celebration in the United States every month, Super Bowl Sunday, 4th of July, you name it, it's that. So there's so much to go for in the United States. There isn't a market where we don't have growth opportunities. We can grow in every market, and we believe that we will. But to your question, if I take the leap of imagination and say, what will our group look like in 5 years' time? I expect every region to grow. But as a proportion, I would say that the United States organically, M&A will park to one side at the moment, but organically should exceed 60% of our total activities. That's what we would believe at the moment.
And moving on to mergers and acquisitions, would we expect to see most of those in the States then? It sounds like that's where the opportunity is. And
well, the largest scale opportunities are in the United States. But, you know, there is a bit of a disconnect in some of the conversations that we've had about expectations in terms of valuation. So back on planet Earth, where we actually want to get a return for our money and for it to be accretive, I would say that as was the case with Impact, we think that if we are patient and discerning, we can find really compelling opportunities, but they're few and far between, and we don't want to cash a falling knife and all of the other cliches you can give. We're very happy to have a low-cost acquisition such as Biscay, where the returns are tremendous. It's very sweet, it's below the radar, and there's low risk. But in scale, yes, I definitely think that the larger opportunities are in the United States. I could say in an area like Japan, there are some large-scale businesses in our product categories, but are we really geared? Do we really understand that market? We'd feel much more, you know, we've been operating in the States for 30 years, and I think just intuitively it would be much less of a risk. Any other questions? Oh, great. Well, thank you very much. I guess if there's one message as a sort of takeaway, just to reiterate that we're really happy with progress, but there's lots more to come. So I'd like to think we'll keep you smiling. Thank you very much.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.